Welcome to the Inside Light podcast, a space for healing, self-connection, and all things spiritual. I'm Terry, also known in the sober world as Sassy Sober Mum, and I believe that within each of us lives a guiding light, a quiet, powerful presence that always knows the way. Here, we'll explore the many paths back to that light. Together, we'll dive into stories of healing, practices that bring us home to ourselves, and conversations about awakening. Those moments when we remember who we truly are. Whether you're seeking clarity, courage, or simply a reminder that you are not alone on your journey of life, this podcast is here to hold space for you. Because the light inside you has never gone out. It's always been guiding you, waiting for you to come back home. This is the Inside Light podcast. Let's begin. Hello, welcome to the podcast this week. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up that halfway through this recording, my window cleaner was here cleaning my windows, and so there is a bit of sound actually from him cleaning the windows with his brush, and I just wanted to apologize for that up front. I should have just pressed stop on the record, but I was in the flow, and so hopefully it's not too irritating for you. And yeah, like I said, it is only a short section anyway, so let's jump into the podcast. Welcome to this week's podcast. I hope you're all well and have had a great weekend and are feeling refreshed. I am feeling good, and I'm excited about today's episode because I'm going to share my experience with and my journey of sobriety. And I feel like this story really underpins everything about where I am right now, about this podcast. Just because for me, stopping drinking really was the gateway to standing in alignment and deep healing and being able to transfer that guidance, that wisdom, and those insights to others and to help them on their healing journey and with their journey of stopping drinking. And so I think that my sober story is one of the pinnacle moments of my life. I think I will always look back on my life and think back to the day where I stopped drinking. And I will always feel gratitude, and it will always be a huge turning point in my life. I would not be where I am today. I would not be the person I am today. And I wouldn't have healed in the way that I have healed had it not been for my drinking and sobriety story. So I thought that I would share it with you. And this is not about, you know, stop drinking. This is not to try and force you into anything, but it's to just offer insight into how if you make changes based on what your body is telling you that it wants you to do. And I think that's the key thing here for me. I listened, finally, to what my body was trying to communicate with me, which is that alcohol is distorting my reality, it's keeping me at a low vibration, it's causing havoc, not only in my external world, but very, very much so in my internal world. And to be honest, I wasn't aware of any of this anyway. It's only now, with the benefit of 6.5 years of not drinking,
can I really pause and reflect on just how much alcohol was robbing from me. I just wasn't aware of it. So let me take you back to my life with alcohol. When I first started drinking, I was born in the late 70s. And so I was a teenager in the very early 90s. And that was a strange time, I think. There was a lot of drinking. I think there's always been, I think we've got a very strong history anyway, of over drinking or drinking. I mean, when I grew up, my mum was a big drinker, and I really saw firsthand as a child how much alcohol was a part of all of the occasions. I mean, my mum used alcohol to party, to celebrate, to commiserate, to deal with stress, to deal with boredom, to deal with loneliness. What I now realize as well is to also probably help to alleviate the symptoms of undiagnosed ADHD and autism and potentially PDA. And so, yeah, my mom was the kind of first person in my life, let's say, who normalized drinking and over drinking. My mom would drink alcohol every day, every night. And seeing my mom drunk was more prominent than seeing my mom sober. So anyway, naturally at 13, 14, 15, those years, when you are starting to go out a bit in the evening as a teenager, you know, we would congregate in the park. What do you do when you're in a quiet northern town where there's not a lot going on and there are older kids down there drinking? Of course you start drinking. That's what you aspire to. So my friends and I, we would drink. I think I was 14 when I started drinking in the summer. And it all started with Diamond White and Cherry B. Those were the drinks. Two Diamond Whites and two Cherry Bs. And I used to spend my pocket money on that. Oh, and 10 Embassy Number One, because I also smoked as well. Not realizing that I was ADHD, autistic and ADHD, I was quite prone to high dopamine, activities, let's say. So drinking was fun, you know, there was a lot of drinking and a bit of passing out, but it was all fun and everybody was doing it, and that's just what people did, you know. There was nothing alarming about it. We all just waited for the weekend so that we could get some booze and hop off down to the local park and drink the alcohol and, yeah, try and chat to our crush, cry over the fact that our crush probably wasn't paying any attention to us, fall over in the hedges, laugh about it all the way home, get told off when you came in too late. And that was just part and parcel of being a teenager. But for me, around mid-teenage years, I started to, drinking was probably part of every weekend. And sometimes there were also recreational drugs involved. Again, it was very common. Everybody was doing it. But I think if I'm being honest, when I got to college or college and university, the drinking probably ramped up to levels that were much more heavy. And unfortunately, this was supported by college and university drinking offers where you could get, you know, pound a pint and that sort of stuff. And so I was always prone to overdrink. I throughout all my drinking life, I never really drank to be sophisticated. I'd like to think that I tried to achieve that. But very much always drank alcohol to get drunk. And I often say now when I talk about this on my other podcast or with clients or in my community, because I work in the sober space as well, I always say I drank like somebody was taking care of me at the end of the night. And, you know, fortunately for me, more often than not, somebody was taking care of me. Like somebody would make sure that I got in a taxi or that I got on a bus or that I got picked up. But there were the odd occasion, there was the odd occasion where I would, I remembered walking all the way home from Leicester, which is a big, big, big city, and walking not all the way home, but at least halfway home to where I lived at 15 in a miniskirt, a kilt, in a tartan miniskirt kilt. And that was very dangerous. And there were lots of those sorts of moments where I made decisions because I was drunk and they could have turned out quite badly for me. And I feel very grateful that they didn't. However, there were lots of shady moments and there were lots of bad decisions. And so in my 20s and my 30s, to be fair, alcohol was a regular friend. It was a weekend thing. You know, you weren't living unless you were living for Friday, going out, getting dressed up and just getting absolutely wasted, basically. Shots, wine, pre-drinks. And that was the norm. Again, that was the norm. The circles, the friends that I had, the circles that I operated in, that everybody was drinking or over drinking. You know, I'd managed to surround myself with people like me. And so drinking and blackouts and getting into stupid situations was very, very normalized. Now, I wasn't drinking every day and I didn't have a physical dependency on alcohol, but I would say that definitely emotionally I was quite dependent on alcohol. You know, if I was feeling stressed at work or sad, I basically mirrored my mother. I would drink. You know, if it was a bad day in the office, I would drink. If it was a really good day and we hit a target and everybody was buzzing, I would drink. And so, yeah, drinking was kind of definitely part of weekly life. But at some point, I think in my 30s, I started to drink wine at home. And under the guise of it being quite sophisticated, pairing it with food and having, you know, nice dinner parties, really they were just opportunities for big drinking sessions. And sometimes my drinking would get me into trouble. You know, in relationships it might create a problem. Perhaps partners would say, I really want you to, you know, cut down your drinking or not drink so much tonight. And I found that very stifling. I've always had an issue with people telling me that sort of thing, or me feeling like I'm being controlled in any way. I mean, really, I think these people were just genuinely concerned for my welfare and probably also might have felt mildly embarrassed at my behaviour. But I would resist that. And would get into an argument if I had to protect the fact that I wanted to drink and not drive to an event or not drink at my own dinner party for a night, for example. So, you know, alcohol definitely created friction in relationships and also in the workplace as well. Sometimes I was very hungover at work and wouldn't be functioning anywhere near the level that I should be. And that could create issues and could also damage my reputation at the time. I was probably known for being a bit of a wreckhead, something that I just thought was funny, just thought was a bit of a laugh, really. I didn't realise that I was actually quite disconnected from myself and that I was actually quite lost, which, you know, is sad, really. But anyway, when I had children, of course, there's this other world that was blossoming at the time that I had my children, and that was, you know, meeting up with other mums and an NCT group mums or mummy wine time. And I very quickly associated putting the baby down to bed, having my reward wine or two or three glasses. And yeah, I think having children is, as a woman especially, that's, for me, I had a career up until that point. So overnight, I've stopped working. I have pretty much lost my financial independence, or at least it's not the level it was at before. And my body is very different. It looks completely different in the mirror. I don't feel like myself. I've got this beautiful, lovely new baby, but oh my goodness, you know, there's no instruction manual. Babies are quite full on, especially your first baby. And there was a lot of moving parts, let's say. And so that ritual of having a nightly wine became a bit of an anchor in my day that helped me to feel a release of the pressure, helped me to deal with the discomfort of feeling a bit lonely. At the time, my partner was still working a lot, and his life probably hadn't changed that much. In terms of the day-to-day, we're still going out to work and socializing or working with adults. And, you know, my world felt like it had become very insular very quickly. And then to top it off, I didn't really recognize who I was in the mirror, and my hormones are probably all over the place. And so I'm feeling a bit up and down emotionally whilst my body copes with having a baby and trying to recalibrate and get back to a place that it was pre-baby, of which is not an overnight thing. So yeah, I think there was definitely an emotional dependency on having a glass or two of wine in the evening. Most nights, would probably say not every night, but most nights, looked forward to it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday sort of thing, four nights a week. And then obviously if there were weekends, big weekends or weekends socializing with family or with friends, then alcohol would play its very important part in that. And I would be here for it, you know, I would be ready and waiting. So life kind of bumbled along for a bit like that. And I had a second baby, and quite soon after that, 6 months or so, my relationship broke down. And that was a very, very, very difficult time for me emotionally, for me personally. I felt quite rudderless. I was very scared. I had no job, so financially I was obviously concerned about how I was going to support myself. And yeah, I think in terms of my just own self-esteem and the way that I felt about myself, everything, I felt quite damaged, and I felt very fragile in that period of my life. And I actually did 100 days sober during that time, because I almost instinctively knew that if I didn't take care of myself, that the wheels might fall off and something really bad might happen. So I did this 100 days of sobriety, and I felt really good. I trained to be in a triathlon, which I'd never done anything like that before. I mean, I'd started running anyway, which was great and really, really good for my mental health. But I bought my first road bike. I'd never had a road bike before. I learned how to ride it. And I also learned how to swim. I could swim in quite a basic way, but I taught myself how to swim breaststroke. And I basically trained towards that. And I went outside every day in nature, and I just kind of slowly pieced myself back together, and I took care of myself. However, after the 100 days, and bearing in mind that I didn't do any what I would call now deeper work, I didn't learn about anybody else that was you know, that I'd stopped drinking. I didn't listen to any podcasts. I didn't read any books or anything. I didn't have any community. I just kind of did this 100 days and tried to be healthy and lose weight in this time. So I quite quickly fell back into drinking again. It was one of my friend's weddings. I was a bridesmaid. And I just decided on her hen do I would drink. And that was that, basically. I kind of fell straight back into drinking again and was drinking 3-4 nights a week again, just as I had done before. I moved house. I think kind of kept things under relative control. I met my now husband, who isn't a big drinker. And about a year into our relationship, I started to feel uncomfortable at my own drinking, even though he never made me feel any discomfort. He never challenged me on my drinking. He never said anything about it. I started to become quite aware of 3 or 4 nights a week, I would be pouring myself a glass of wine whilst he would have water. And I would just be sipping this wine on my own whilst we were watching TV or, you know, whatever we were doing. And I just, it started to make my wine consumption feel very big. And so I think I started to question it a bit more. And I also started to panic a bit about this moderation that I had never quite mastered, that I sort of thought like I might be able to master at some point in my life, nearly 40, maybe I could learn how to moderate. I'd never quite mastered it before, but I was sort of convinced myself that it was on the horizon for me, that I would get there. And so I was kind of in this moderation game for a bit and trying to moderate and trying not to overdrink. And in some ways, I think trying to keep my drinking from him, or at least the extent of my drinking. I don't think that he saw me drunk that much. I managed to keep a lid on that. But there was this weekend that cropped up, and I was with a group of girlfriends, and we sometimes had these weekends where we would go and drink a lot and just have fun, really. And I kind of promised myself that I wouldn't overdrink, that I would be good. And so I went off on this weekend, on this Saturday, and I think we got to where we were meant to get to by about 3 o'clock. Well, by 6 o'clock, I was already drunk. And the rest of the night is quite patchy, but I think I was in and out of a blackout. There are pictures of me having a cocktail in a bar, and I've got little snippets of the night, fragments, if you like, of the night in my mind. But a lot of the detail has gone, as is what happens with the blackout. You know, they're quite scary, really. You just lose whole chunks of night. You know, it's, yeah, not very nice feeling. And then in the morning, I woke up and I felt absolutely awful. I felt terrible. And a lot of the relationships and connections in your life, a lot of those have been built around drinking. And so you have to have a bit of a step back from that if you want to really heal. You can't be in those environments, perhaps with those people, because there's too much temptation. And I really wanted to protect this new direction. There was something in me that just felt like, if I could nail this, if I could really get happy with not drinking, then there's more coming for me. You know, there's more to my life than what I've experienced so far, which, to be honest, had been quite a lot of chaos, really. Like, my life had been quite chaotic, and lots of different friendships, lots of different friends, moving to lots of different cities, lots of jobs, just yeah, not feeling very rooted really anywhere. And so I put in a lot of effort to stop drinking. You know, I back then there wasn't a huge amount on social media. Like there was a bit, not anything like what there is now, but I did find some podcasts that were a lifeline, and I would listen to a podcast every single day, and I would read all the books that I could. I just, yeah, got very involved, laser focus. And I made sobriety my new project, if you like. It was my new special interest, my new project. And I gave it everything I could. I put so much effort into it. Every time I had a wobble, I would be journaling. I would be putting on a podcast to reset my mindset. I'd be picking up another new book and reading it and reflecting. I'd be talking to my husband, who was very supportive. And also, because he's not a big drinker, that really helped me, because there wasn't a lot of alcohol, well, there wasn't any alcohol in the home. I could just throw it away and get rid of it. But you know, there were many, many uncomfortable situations. You know, family felt a bit like, well, you know, why are you doing this? Most people, if you told them that you'd stop drinking, they would say, oh, well, so have you got a problem then? And you know, you were sort of treated, it was a bit us and them. And that was sometimes quite hard to cope with, to deal with. And also, I do think lots of people that are stopping drinking, you know, are stopping drinking for a reason, because they can't moderate, or they're not able to handle the alcohol that they're having, even if that's just every now and then. And so there can be a lot of shame, I think, attached to people's drinking. And we've, well, a lot of us have got that experience of waking up in the morning and looking at the phone and thinking, oh my god, what have I said? What did I say to that person? I vaguely remember talking to this person or saying that, or you know. And it's there can be a real rucksack of shame on your back, I think, going into this journey. And so when you do start to explore life without alcohol, a lot of those old shameful moments can resurface or can bubble up to the surface, and they need looking at and processing, and that's quite difficult as well. There's also the emotional side of things. So for me, I started drinking at 14, and we now know that this stunts your emotional growth. You know, this stunts your cognitive capability for emotional resilience, and so sometimes when people stop drinking, they almost revert back to that teenage version of themselves, and they're not able to handle challenges. They don't know how to handle challenges, they don't know how to handle discomfort, because there's been this coping mechanism that's just been slapped into place every time there's been something challenging to deal with. And so having to face all of these challenges and things that came up sober and, you know, naked, without any way of forcing myself into an artificial comfort zone, or if you like, or chemical comfort zone, was quite jarring and confronting. You know, having to process things from my past was difficult, you know, for sure. Sitting with the emotion was difficult. But, you know, like the journey shows you, you are capable of that. And actually, the more you do it, the more you learn how to do it, and the better you get at it. And that's really been true for me, and true for many people that I see in this community that do get sober and learn to cultivate brilliant emotional resilience and build up their emotional toolbox for the first time in their lives and cope with difficulties and challenges. And that's very empowering, and that feeds into the engine of self-acceptance and self-love and self-validation the more that you show yourself that you can cope with difficulties, the more confidence grows that you can cope with difficulties. And with that confidence comes a new appreciation and more self-compassion for who you are, what you've been through, and how far you've come, and just, yeah, how much better you are at giving yourself what you need. So anyway, I have been sober for 6.5 years, and there's been lots of ups and downs, especially in the early part of the journey, but kind of halfway through that 6 years, I decided that I really wanted to help other people and to pass on the wisdom and the experience and the insight that I'd gained on my own journey. And so I've been active in this sober space for nearly 3 years now. I have an online women's community called Thrive Sober Community, and that's a private community, and we have weekly Zoom meetings, and it's really lovely. It's a great, supportive, non-judgmental space. And I also coach women one-to-one as well for 6 weeks or 100 days. And I find that extremely rewarding work. I love it so much. And I have a podcast as well. I have another podcast that is currently more established than this one, because this one's very new. But that is Sober Stories from Everyday People. And that basically is conversations with people that aren't in the media, or, you know, aren't famous, or they're just kind of regular people that have got, yeah, it's their story of their drinking and how they stopped drinking and what that was like. And it's very inspiring, and lots of people gain a lot of healing from that podcast. I feel very, very grateful to have brought this into the world. And will continue to do it for as long as I can, really. But one of the things that I think is the way that this links in really nicely to where I am now and this podcast is that I see my sobriety now, whilst at the time it was the biggest thing in my life, and it's still, I think it will always be one of the biggest things of my life, getting sober. But I very much see it now as a gateway to a spiritual awakening, or to deeper healing and deepening and strengthening the relationship with yourself. That's been my experience anyway. So without sobriety and everything that sobriety taught me, everything that it's brought me, I don't think I would be here where I am now. It's a really big part of my spiritual story. It's a big part of my awakening. I very much see sobriety as the stepping stones into the spiritual awakening that I'm going through now, and how much life is shifting and changing. Every single day it's changing. And I just don't think that I would be on a frequency or vibrating at a level to be able to be in this place where I'm having this awakening had I not stopped drinking. I do think that alcohol is a low vibration substance. I hear about that quite a lot in the reading and in the community, obviously the spiritual community, but I do think that alcohol lowers your vibration, and with that comes lower vibrational experiences, you know, like shame and low self-worth and people pleasing when it's making you very unhappy and getting into situations that you don't want to be in. So I do see alcohol now, you know, removing that from my life allowed me to vibrate at a different frequency. And now some of these things, the healing that I'm doing since I stopped drinking, which is, you know, altering my frequency even more, I do think that it's only really down to me stopping drinking that I have managed to get to this place where I am now, where not only am I going through an awakening, which I'm very grateful for, but also being in a position to spread this information and be guided to do this podcast and to share these stories that might help other people to heal or make different decisions or think about coping mechanisms that might not be as helpful to people as they think they are, and to question that and to see whether they are aligned with those coping mechanisms or whether there is any room for change, I suppose. So yeah, that's my story with alcohol and how it twists and turns, but ultimately leads me to the path I'm on today. I am grateful for my history of overdrinking, because I don't believe that I would be able to cultivate the self-compassion, the self-love, the self-appreciation that I do today had it not been for the contrast of the dark times when I was drinking too much or getting into silly situations through my drinking. And I have a lot to be grateful for. I really truly do feel that way, and I think that I would never change the overdrinking. I realize now it's part of my soul path, and it led me to where I am today to talk about this with you. So it's all relevant, and I'm fortunate that I'm now in a position to be able to frame this in a certain way that is helpful, conducive, supportive to my life moving forward, and not something that keeps me trapped in victim mindset or keeps me with a stick in my hand to beat myself up with, because that's how I lived a lot of my life and alongside a lot of my drinking life as well. So yeah, I always like to leave with a question, and the question for you today to ponder, to reflect on, to journal about is, where are you stuck in your life? Where are you stuck? And where can you create space and change to just give yourself a bit of wiggle room to shimmy to the left a bit or shimmy over to the right? Because that might lead you to a gateway, like it led me to my sober gateway. And that might create a huge cataclysmic change in your life. So thinking about where you're stuck, but also when you need to find a way to cope with the inevitable highs and lows of life, when you need to find a way to cope, what is your go-to coping mechanism? What is it that you do to rest your soul and alleviate any discomfort and anxiety? And is that a supportive, helpful, soul-aligned coping mechanism? And on that note, I thank you very much again for tuning in. And next week, I'm going to be covering AUD-HD, which is autism ADHD. I'm AUD-HD. I think I'm also PDA. So I'll be exploring my journey with that, how that's felt to find out about being AUD-HD at 47 years old, because I'm very late to this party. And I wanted to share my experiences with that. I know that there is not a huge amount of content out there yet around AUD-HD, so I'm hoping that I can provide some wisdom and insights to help anyone who's looking for that healing to feel better by listening to me. So thank you so much, and see you next time.